Hey, Caitlin.
Hi, Rebecca.
How are you?
I'm good. You know, what have I been doing? It's week whatever of quarantine, and I have in the last 7 hours decided that I need to absolutely get a new apartment. So...
The 400 square foot studio not cutting it anymore?
Well, I measured it and it's closer to 325 square feet, which you've been in my place. That should not surprise you. And I made the mistake of walking into a newly renovated one bedroom that's in my building. It's just above me. And it's two of my apartments put together for like basically what I'm paying. So this is the perk of living in like a historic building where all of the units are different and like the rules are made up. So that's consuming my like heart, soul, and brain. What have you been up to?
Not too much. I was hanging out with my spouse earlier and she...
Oh, do I get to talk? That's me! Sorry, I got really excited when I realized this was the book that you two were going to talk about because I read this one and I really enjoyed this one and I begged and pleaded to be allowed to join the conversation.
Would you like to say your name?
Can I refer to myself as the spouse? I won't. That's terrible.
If you want to, we can.
No, I just think it's cute that that's what you've been doing. My name is Ruth Elizabeth. I'm still your spouse. I don't know what other context your friends on the internet would like.
You are our secret surprise guest for this episode, which we've never had before. We've never done like a three-person discussion of a book. So I can't wait. And I'm really excited because you and I have many things in common, but our taste in queer romance fiction is not one of the things that I would say that we have in common. So I can't wait.
I'm excited.
I'm here.
So Rebecca, do you want to tell our listeners what book we are going to be discussing today?
We're discussing Scout and the Lavender Girl by Casey Littleton. We usually volley between the two of us about how a novel opens before we deep dive, but since you were so excited, do you feel comfortable explaining how this book starts?
Sure. This book starts with probably one of the best meet-cutes that I've read in a minute, and I like it for two reasons, because it is a genuine meet-cute. You can feel the chemistry and the emotion, but because it also plays with the trope of enemies to lovers so well and hits on one of our favorite jokes in the queer lady community, because our sweet protagonist...
Do you want to set up the joke?
No, I think it'll become pretty clear in a second. Because our sweet protagonist, Evie, literally rear ends our other protagonist, Scout, while Scout is driving a U-Haul.
No budget trucks for these two. Or Penske? Does Penske even still exist? I've moved in a lot of vehicles.
Ruth, I think you touched on a really good point, which is that this is a meet cute that plays right from the beginning on sort of like a trope of the queer lady community. And to me, the story really quickly unfolds into two characters who are very entrenched in different parts of the queer community. And so you have Evie from her perspective first, and she's immediately like, oh, look at this hot butch. Like, she's, you know, she's like, I am this, you know, femme queen and my hair's on point. Like, let me have to crawl out of like the trunk of my car in order to talk to this person who is fuming mad that I just rear-ended their U-Haul. Like, we're just immediately thrown into so many different things. It's like, it's kind of a tornado of a book.
I love how self-aware this book is, and you know that from the very first couple of pages of this interaction. You know, Evie makes the joke to Scout immediately. Like, don't you usually wait until the second date to bring the U-Haul or something to that effect? So it's very aware of itself.
Mm-hmm. I am often awkward on this podcast. I feel you being here, there might be some new whatever to navigate, but I feel going forward and being incredibly honest in discussing this book that I'm going to trip over my language so much, because one of the things I like the most about this book, and you just brought it up, Ruth Elizabeth, is the two main characters speak and we get to experience their internal monologue where we hear things that aren't flattering. We hear things that are problematic. And we follow the trajectory of why they make some of the comments they make that are really unsettling sometimes, but so incredibly human. And I am a person who tries very hard when I enter a room to be very diplomatic with my language and be very cautious as I say things and try my best not to do anything out of ignorance. But I don't know if it's possible to talk about this book without kind of embracing the arrogance and ignorance within it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this book rotates between two first-person narratives. We get each MC's point of view flipping back and forth. And there's a call-out of Evie as a bisexual. Scout pens her, and she's like, oh, she's bi. I know it because of X, Y, and Z. And Scout says this out loud to her. She erases her bisexual, you know, declaration of herself, basically, to Evie. And Evie completely turns it, and she's like, oh, let me guess, butch, exclusive wearer, the strap on, da 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 da, and she flings it right back. And I actually laughed out loud. Again, I need to stop reading these books on my lunch break at work, because it is a conversation that mirrors my own life in a, I will call you out, oh, you're gonna call me out too. So kind of appreciated that.
Yeah, Caitlin, I thought about you a lot when I was reading this book. I thought back to some of our experiences, for, you know, late college, early grad school, as fairly femme presenting women. And you know, we expect to be treated a certain way in heteronormative spaces, right? Unless we out ourselves, it doesn't necessarily come up. Rebecca doesn't have that luxury. But then again, when we enter queer spaces, there is often this, you know, oh, you're here with your gay best friend.
Right.
You're not, you don't belong here. Like, you must be something else. So I, you know, my heart broke in the first chapter for Evie. I really saw a lot of myself in her. And I wondered how you felt reading probably like the first half of this book, listening to some of Scout's comments. Mm-hmm. They're not nice.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I went into this book because you recommended it to me, like, full disclosure. And it's one thing to have a main character that you may not like or agree with, and it was another thing to sort of have the mirror on, like, a kind of really negative aspect of the queer community, which is our own, the muck that we all get into with stereotypes and like how we view each other sometimes. And what I loved, and what I think this book did better than some other things that address this, is it not only showed the negative, but it showed the armor that you and I definitely put on when we're in queer spaces, where you and I are both very quick to be like, oh, you're gonna do X, Y, and Z to me, or you're gonna call me out, or like ignore me when I'm trying to order a drink, let me do X, Y, and Z back. And I don't think you and I would ever, well, I let me not speak for both of us. I don't think I would be as like quick about it as Evie, but I think there is something there of the protective cloak that you put around yourself of like, let me hit back, let me play into the joke, or let me demonstrate that like I'm just as up on it as you are.
Yeah, before we get really into the plot, what we learn, the hints are there. It's not expressed. I think I put down like the 43% markers when it was finally clarified in the book, but your Scout's language does nothing but really leads me to believe that, oh, this is going to be a queer individual who again, my language is going to be problematic. I'm speaking on behalf of the characters, but who was burned by a bisexual who potentially ended their relationship and then is now with a man, or ended their relationship by cheating with a man or something of that caveat. Like, I saw that coming, but only because there was so much anger at a potential bisexual woman she was attracted to. So, you know, it's the gatekeepers we put within our own community, which feels ridiculously timing because we all agreed to do this a while ago. And, you know, a night before we sat down to do this, a few nights before we sat down to do this, was the gatekeeping involving Melissa Braden and her writing and where it is within the queer sphere. And, you know, making a resounding cry that the B is not silent in LGBTQ plus, and what that looks like. And the first woman I ever dated was with whatever, I was desperately trying to figure everything out. And I, at that time, used the term bisexual because I didn't know what was going on. I had only dated men. I was trying to figure myself out. And she looked at me and said, I don't sleep with bisexuals. I only sleep with lesbians. And I just remember being in a very compromising position and just going, I'm having to declare myself beyond what I thought at that time was my declaration, which was a gray space I felt safe in at the time. And what that kind of, like, you're getting it from both sides of the community. You're being completely belittled and erased for being bisexual by the heterosexual community. And then within the queer space, it's like you're straight until proven queer enough. That's not what I identify as now. And I do have weird mixed guilt about identifying there for a while because I, again, equated it with safety. But so, yeah, all that's to say, we should probably get into who these two women kind of are outside of their sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm. So, Ruth, do you want to introduce us to Evie?
So Evie is currently the chef / manager of a boutique pizza place in Austin. Very hipster, very chic, and she makes these incredible pizzas that have crazy combinations and is sort of famous for this in the area. Evie is also driving for like the equivalent of DoorDash and also maybe Uber. As well as she was working on her MBA, gets into some financial trouble as a result of a failed relationship / engagement.
Marriage. She was married to him.
With a man. He stole money from her. So she was working at the company that his family owned in construction. And then when they split and he stole money, she left, which is how she ended up at the pizza place in the first place. Evie is super femme presenting, very much rockabilly. She has the lavender hair, the curls, the bandana, the lipstick, the heels, all of it. And she talks a lot about her curves and is described quite a lot as voluptuous.
Mm-hmm.
And super proud of like the woman she is. I love her self-confidence in her body. Yeah. And then there's Scout. And Caitlin, I'm not going to talk about Scout because right now I feel like I don't, as the more left of femme one, I just talk about Scout.
You don't want to be the one to say Scout is the hot butch?
No, I don't.
Scout is the hot butch, retired WNBA player who we meet her as she's driving a U-Haul into her new place. She's she's not a property manager, because that's the dad. She owns the property where Evie and her family live and where Evie's family has various jobs as property managers, as the maintenance guy. She also owns the pizza restaurant where Evie works. And she, through her seat on this board, which focuses on investing in businesses that are female run or driven, she is trying to recoup her losses and create a new life for herself after she has been left by her former person for a man. And the greatest, my favorite aspect of getting to know these two characters was Scout's just trying to do her job. She is very much going from place to place, visiting these businesses for the first time or for the first time in a while. And everywhere she goes, she runs into Evie because Evie does all of the jobs.
And I so, oh my God, do I relate to Evie in this moment? The working the jobs that are tip or manager inclusive, so you make a little bit more money, but then still not cutting it. And anytime you have debt, basically just trying to outrun the debt first. Just, my heart goes out to her. Also, her car gets totaled. The U-Haul is fine. The U-Haul probably won't even need to, like, you're going to return it. They're never going to know. But her car is completely totaled. That's it. So now, besides all these things she does, she also doesn't have transportation to get there. And it's just, oh, goodness.
I think we talk about Evie, how Evie is so characterized by her body, by especially the other characters around her, and also by herself. But Scout is also really classified by her body. She has the frame of a former athlete. She's wiry and strong and still pretty fit, but she is recovering from, spoiler alert, cancer, as well as some pretty significant injuries. So there's a lot in this book of the two characters sort of placing a lot of their own stresses or their own feelings on their own bodies. And I thought it one way that this worked really well with the two different viewpoints is you kind of see the disparate self. Like, you have yourself, how you view yourself, and you have like how you're viewed by other people and how different they are, which I thought was really smart, especially as you're getting to know someone that you're interested in, and that there's that kind of slippery feeling of like feeling really good because this person is into you and you can tell that they're into you, and so you're confident, but that doesn't erase like the years and years of internalized negative thought that you have about yourself or like the issues that you're having. And there's just so many layers to all these characters. We just talk about them for another 20 minutes each, I think.
Without trying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Austin's a big city, but like any community you end up belonging to, there's only so many degrees of separation. So besides Scout getting to the new complex that she owns, moving into her new, it's basically like a townhouse within this complex. We learn that Evie's dad is the property manager. Her brother is kind of like the foreman, the maintenance person on site. And then she, like you said earlier, she owns the pizza place, and she goes in to speak to the former manager of the pizza place, kind of vent. And as she's venting, she looks up and like, who's slinging pie in the back but Evie? So we immediately have this situation where they may have kind of possibly encountered each other. I think what we also are missing is Evie's so distraught when she hits the U-Haul that she doesn't recognize who Scout is. And Scout is a local celebrity. And was definitely like, what does Evie say? She's on my laminated list. Like she's never going to come off, but she's so, all she can pay attention to really is the wreck and kind of this person she thinks is attractive. And it is until her brother shows up with his tow truck and he calls out Scout as the professional athlete she was, that she's like, oh, crap. Not only did I run into this hot woman's car, I also ran into my childhood crush, my teenage crush, my current crush. Like, it just, there's a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
You've got feelings all over your face.
I have a lot of feelings about them. I think they, so sometimes you read romance because you want the fantasy, right? You want something that it feels like an escape and it's fluffy and there's not a lot of conflict and you can just get lost in this beautiful love story. That's not what this book is, right? This book did what I wish WLW romance had. I wish that my experience of WLW when I was coming out so 10 years ago, was more consistently like this, because this book feels like representation. It feels messy and problematic and complicated, and the two of them sort of finding each other in this really, like, this set of circumstances that, let's be honest, should not work. Phoebe basically quits her job at the pizza place when Scout shows up and she realizes that Scout is the new investor, and Scout starts saying horrible things about the, and I believe I'm quoting when I say, fat-assed bisexual who ran into her U-Haul.
It's rough.
Oh, you have to laugh, because it's terrible. Like, what a terrible thing to say about a person. And it's even worse because she's can hear you and she's right there. And like,
the and she fact, lays into her when she comes back. Like, she dishes it harder than she received it. And she, like, they both bubble to the surface insecurities in the other one. But they're so freaking stubborn that they're not going to let the other one see them be kind of pushed off balance. And then we also, as readers, are privy to, like, God, she's horrible, and damn, that's hot. Like, it's this constant, that very much, like, driven force of, is it passion or is it anger? Yes, mm-hmm. The answer is yes.
There are a lot of moments in this book where the characters are confronted by their own sort of internalized phobias, whether it's an internalized biphobia or an internalized sort of wealth disparity and misunderstanding. I really appreciate the moments where the characters are forced to kind of grapple with those in really tangible ways. It's not this high concept, almost therapy speak exploration. It's nitty gritty, and we get to see the tangible results of the character coming to terms with it quickly. So the example that I'm thinking of is when Scout shows up to the pizza place, is talking to Kimberly, who is the other manager of the pizza place, and saying horrible things about Evie. And Evie comes out of the kitchen and says, well, basically, if I'm so terrible, you don't need me. I quit, and leaves. And Kimberly says, she single-handedly has kept your business from failing. I am bad at business. I know I'm your friend, but I ran your business into the ground. You need her. And Scout, instead of pushing back, and this is one of the moments that I really respected Scout and appreciated her as a character, takes that at face value, walks out the door, and chases Evie down to apologize. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And try to figure out a way to get her to stay.
Yes. And if I can take what you've talked about and Caitlin briefly when you were speaking earlier about wealth as well, there's this genius moment that I haven't encountered in books you and I have talked about, Caitlin, where when Evie is pointing out what's wrong with the restaurant, it's done in a way that's like, you're wasting and blowing money on frivolous things that aren't good for business. And we do learn that, you know, Evie is just short of her MBA, but this is also stuff I don't think she did learn in grad school, will continue to learn in grad school. Because there are moments throughout this where we hear about something going wrong at the complex that Scout owns or things like this. And Evie will know, but Scout won't. And Scout will make a comment, why haven't I been called? Why don't I know about this? And Evie's like, well, unless it goes over $500, they're not going to call you. They're just going to put it into the monthly budget. And she's like, of course this costs more than $500. And Evie's like, no, we have a cousin who has a friend who knows somebody. And that's, I've never really felt like I've seen my dad in a book before, but the dad and the brother in this, in some ways, outside of the homophobia, my dad's not homophobic, but that kind of like degrees of separation and connection that you can fix the refrigerator because he knows somebody who can fix the Freon. So the busted fridge that nobody wants to buy, he's just investing in the Freon or whatever. And that happens throughout the course of this. There's a scrappiness to this book I really, really appreciate. And I don't think anything's off limits in this book, because as we continue to go through this story and learn more about each character and we're introduced to people around, we learn about Evie's brother, he's just queer. He's not bi, he's gay. I think he identifies as gay. He's also sober. We're dealing with a mother who passed away. So as you said earlier, like, spoiler alert, Scout is a cancer survivor. Evie's mother was lost to cancer. And there's this thing where you start creating secrets when you learn things about people, where you start shutting off pieces of yourself, thinking maybe it will be too hard for them to learn or take in. And that felt very real to me. This almost projection of security you put on other people, but you don't invite them in to find out if they want the information. So it becomes an even bigger thing as time goes on. I thought that was really beautifully handled.
Yeah, the handling of secrets, I think, was really delicate and really sweet in a lot of ways. Can we talk about Evie and her brother for a second? Since we're sort of on that subject.
Yeah.
I responded so well to that sweet moment that Evie and her brother had. So I'm going to fast forward and then I'm going to rewind. So they have this really sweet moment where they each acknowledge their own queerness that they've both been. So they've both been living fairly comfortably and out to their friends as queer for years, but have not told the family. And like, she kind of knows about him and he maybe knows about her, but they're not really talking about it. They have this moment where he is by circumstance forced to finally say the words to her, "I'm gay."
She walks in on him and she calls him a power. She's like, "There's no good way to walk in and find out your brother is a power bottom." I think that's how it was written. Get it.
So he has to say he's gay. She catches him in the moment.
And I'm going to interject just a second. There's notes too and like hints at it till we get here about him like scrubbing off nail polish. He has his own physical expression things that we're treated to as readers going forward. So.
Yeah. I appreciated the moment because he says he's gay and then she like sort of nods and pauses for a minute and lets them both just sit in that for a second. And then she says, "I'm bi." And then they both sit in it for a second. And then this was the moment that I was like, oh God, I'm going to sob reading my Kindle right now. She says, "So do you want to come out together or do you want to have your own coming out?"
Yeah, that was really sweet. And like, I find that coming out, how do I say this? I haven't found very many coming out narratives in WLW that I can sort of like sit comfortably in. Like either they're too close to home for me and I don't want to engage with them, or it's too easy and the emotional payoff isn't there. Like I do feel like it can sometimes be used as an easy way to add conflict to a book that may not earn it. But this didn't feel like that. This was really like we were getting just a glimpse into Evie's life, and we were getting dropped into these family moments with her that I think would have happened whether Scout was in the picture or not, and it would have happened outside of the arc of this romance. So I loved that, and I loved that you saw the family sort of coming together to do work together to support each other. So Evie supporting her brother and vice versa as they decide to come out to their dad, who doesn't take it very well at first, but then we sort of see through the book him coming to terms with that and trying to like fix his relationship with his son, especially, who they have some contentious moments. Yeah, I thought it was well done. I thought it was sweet. Sweet is a good word for it. Like, reminded me of coming out to my brother. Bless him. Who, when I said like, "Hey, I think I'm gay," he sort of sat with it. He gave me a beat, and then he was like, "Aren't we all a little bit gay?" And it was just the best thing he could have told me. And I think that's just such a thing that you do with your siblings. Like, okay, I am realizing as we're talking about this book is what I loved about it, where there are so many hallmarks of, I think, a more traditional contemporary WLW. There's like the family that's really around, which is in a lot of these romances that we've talked about. You have the tropes that we're familiar with, the rich girl, poor girl. You have a boss employee thing, which we've talked a lot about. You have like an ex coming back. You have another ex coming back. You have secrets that destroy relationships. Like, and this addresses all of those things that are so familiar and can be formulaic, and it turns them all on its head, and it sort of takes away the veneer of like overwriting it, and it instead is sort of saying like, here's like, this is a really grimy, this is a really like, we're getting down in the weeds, we're talking about money, we're talking about pizza ovens, we're talking like, we're addressing all of this stuff.
I'm glad that your nitty gritty involves brick oven or like larger oven pizza ovens, Caitlin.
That was an important point of this book. That was a major moment in their relationship.
It's such a major point. We ate pizza for dinner tonight before meeting up with you.
That was important. So I'm really glad that you're bringing up all of the tropes that are kind of put into this book and then turned inside out, because there's one that we haven't mentioned yet that I think bears mentioning. Prior to the events of this plot, Evie has been an out and proud bisexual lady who has not actually gotten it on with a lady identified person.
She kissed a preacher's daughter when she kissed both the preacher's son and daughter when she was 5.
And that's it.
But she hasn't kissed a woman since, because the first kiss moment is mounting and building whatever, and then Scout and her thousands of pounds of insecurity says, well, I thought you should know what a proper kiss from a woman felt like, to try to take back power afterwards.
So my question to the two of you, because I've decided that you're the experts in this by virtue of your podcast.
Okay.
Does this count as a toaster oven novel? Because it has the coming out narrative, technically, and it has the first time narrative. But, like, does it?
Caitlin, if you want to go first, I have very strong opinions about that, so maybe you should hit it first.
Ruth, do you want to just explain what a toaster oven narrative is for people who may not get the jargon?
I think Rebecca better take that one.
So the reason... So in a toaster oven novel, it refers to the joke from the end of the Ellen DeGeneres episode where she comes out, and she's given a toaster oven. I think the joke started there. Full disclosure, I was not quite out yet when that happened. I came into the joke later. But from my understanding, when it is labeled such in a book, it is one of the main characters is coming to terms with the attraction and feelings they have towards another female identified person. I don't hear this used in like transmasculine narratives. So another female identified person. So it's like coming to terms with being queer. If it's a WLW book, they're going to hook up with the person and then like, oh, here's your toaster oven for the punchline. With those things said, this book to me is not a toaster oven, because Evie's not coming to terms with her queerness. She knows she's bisexual. Like, that's never at question. She just hasn't had that particular romantic experience. And being that she was with somebody, married to somebody previously, who also invited a woman in for a threesome because he couldn't communicate. And he said, oh, that's just messy.
That's not technically what happened. He cheated on her. She found out about it. His solution was, well, if you're really bi, we could just all do it.
Do this. Just, I don't, there's a lot to talk so... about with the ex and his mom, but like, I don't think I want to participate in that part of the book conversation, and I'd volley it to you too. But, I'm just not, there's enough voices about people who bring other people down. I don't really feel the need to highlight it today. Do you guys feel differently?
Nope.
No. Okay.
I want to hear more about your toaster oven theories.
I don't think it's a toaster oven because she is inherently bisexual. I don't think having sex with somebody the first time makes a toaster oven book. Otherwise, there are plenty of people who aren't queer who have toaster oven moments in their life. Like,
ooh, hot take.
But I'm not going to out anybody in my life, or not even not out in my life, but I will say that there are individuals who feel very comfortable after a glass or six of wine going, I slept with a woman once. I don't think that's their toaster oven moment. I don't think the inherent act of sleeping with somebody of a comparable gender identity as yourself leads to like a toaster oven book. So Evie does have her first and multiple sex scenes with a woman in this, but being that she has known, as she claims, since she was 5, that she's attracted to men and women, that whole like euphoric mind blown, oh God, now it all makes sense. Something was always not quite there, or this kiss feels like what people write symphonies about, or the way she looks at me elates me more than being like incredibly romantic by a gender pairing I was told my whole life made sense to most people. None of that's on the table. So I am definitely in team camp, not toaster oven. Your thoughts, Caitlin? So that's a Caitlin disagrees with me. Bring it.
No. I tend to agree with that statement. I think there's a nuance in this book that you've had, like, Evie does not necessarily question her own queerness. She knows how she identifies and how she feels and what she's attracted to. But there is a large current in this book of Evie wading through, okay, this is who I am, and how does that impact how people treat me? Which I think is an aspect of a toaster oven novel that is like less sexy to talk about. But so maybe it's like halfway, because she's sort of figuring out like what it means to be an out queer person in a way that's different than I would say before she met Scout. I think there is some exploration of like, How does this change my relationship to the world and my relationship to the people in it?
Right, to where people then also equate you. She does go on multiple blind dates in trying to... There's a lot of time that passes. Time would move quickly sometimes, and I wouldn't be able to follow. It'd be like months later, weeks later, days later, 2 minutes later. I can't always keep up, because whatever the plot point was, we moved at the speed of that plot point, which is... It didn't hinder the book at all for me. It was just different consistencies. But you know, she goes on multiple blind dates, and we do hear about her going out with one woman, and she's like, but I didn't want to kiss her the way I want to kiss Scout. I didn't want to be with her the way I wanted to be with Scout. I do want to point out the atrocious blind date we are privy to, with the gross, I don't know how to describe this character as anything but disgusting man, who when she goes back to his house and he offers her a drink, it was, I have Coke or water, beer and wine that's over a week old. Do you want any of that? And she's just like, no, I'm good. And then he pours himself a vodka, whatever. And she's like, and there's a line that says, oh, I guess I wasn't good enough to be offered that. And then it just, I'm not giving him too much attention, but it just goes horribly from there, to the point where she is sneaking out of his first floor bedroom window to get to an Uber shoeless and braless, because she just does not want to be here for it anymore. Mm-hmm. And that resonated on stories that have been shared with me, or hopefully stories about anybody except me, like a level that just, but there's so many nods too to picking on each other, because when Scout is talking about like a woman's never kissed you, a woman's never stood by a bar and not let you leave till she bought you a drink, she's never, you know, screamed outside of your window until you agreed to go on a date with her. And then there's the side by line when we're hearing Scout's narrative, where she's like, you know, all things I've done, but I'm never going to admit that to you. And this kind of, this manic unhealthiness that happens in the process of trying to date people that we all conveniently forget we participate in. So.
Yeah, the characters are real people in this book. Like, they're problematic and they do stuff that you're like, oh no, we've all had a friend who's done that. And if we don't have a friend who did it,
it was
us. Fuck with it, it was me. Like, that is embarrassing. We have to think about that. I really liked being faced with those internal monologues from both Scout and Evie's chapters in this book, where they were both, you know, they would say one thing out loud, and then the internal monologue was like, I mean, I did it, but like, it was different, right? The excuses we make for ourselves when we see a trait in someone else that we don't like, because it reminds us of a trait in ourselves that we don't like.
Mm-hmm. Babe, can I flip this on you a little bit and put you on the spot?
Oh, dear. Yeah, okay.
All right. So I usually flip it on Caitlin, but the first physical experience between the two of them, the first like inherently queer sexual experience, like bent over a table in a restaurant, were you kicked out because it was a food prep area?
First of all, that is not sanitary, and you should not do that. So if you're listening at home, don't have sex in restaurant kitchens. That is not appropriate. That was very upsetting to me. But the scene was so hot that I had to just, like, kind of let it go, which was a practice, I think, in meditation for me. Stop laughing. I grew as a person.
I mean, no. Ruth Elizabeth, I was concerned. There were knives on the table. They had just been slicing things. Like, this was also unsafe.
It was acidic? A little bit?
Yes, a little bit.
And there's a specific line where it's like, you know that the author knew that this was inappropriate when she was writing it, because she talks about Evie being one butt cheek on and one butt cheek off a cutting board. Oh my God.
I also, but on the flip, it was very self-aware because they could see them from the street. So Evie had the mindfulness to flip off the overhead light so that they, you couldn't see into the restaurant, but they could see out.
Great. That fixes it.
But I mean, it was also a really hot scene.
It was.
It was not fade to black, and it wasn't. The reason I don't like reading toaster oven books is because the first sex scene is always accompanied by, like, oh my God, I never knew that sex could feel like this. Like, because this person, you know, like, there's something inherent about X, Y, you know, like, it, there's no explanation beyond, like, this is so perfect. But this was like, oh my God, I didn't know sex could feel like this because this person is so good at sex. Like,
yes.
Which is different and important. And that is an important milestone that we all have in our lives. And if you haven't had it, namaste, I don't know.
If you haven't had it, we want that for you.
Yeah.
We will cross our fingers for you.
This particular act ends with them both having moments, Scout freaking out and leaving for cocktails that Evie doesn't join her for, even though the three of them were on their way. And I think it works too that it's not a reciprocated scene for it to maintain that. I don't like the term reciprocated because it makes it sound like it's a quid pro quo thing. But there wasn't immediately the person who hadn't slept with a woman proving their sexual prowess with a woman. I'm stepping over my language. You two help me with this.
Evie had an orgasm and Scout did not.
It wasn't even the orgasm as much as, like, Evie's sensual touch was like rubbing circles on Scout's back under her shirt.
I mean, there was, yeah, it was intimate without there needing to be. I thought it was really delicate because they didn't feel the need for Evie to be portrayed reciprocating sexual touch to quote unquote prove Evie's queerness. It was clear that it was a queer sexual encounter, even though one person was, let's say, topping,
right,
and the other person was receiving. It was just allowed to be that intimate moment between the two of them, and that was.
But also off of the topping, it wasn't like a stone top narrative.
Caitlin, I'm really glad that you brought up the aspect of a quote-unquote first time without that light bulb moment of, oh, you know, the angels sang and the light came down and suddenly I was a different person. It's not, you know, it's not a new fact to anybody in this conversation that I am not a gold star lesbian. I really appreciated in this book the acknowledgement that a person could have not only sexual encounters, but like fairly satisfactory encounters, mm-hmm, that were straight and then also have satisfactory or good sexual encounters that were not straight, right? I appreciated that it wasn't this black and white, like, oh, you either enjoy having sex with this gender or you enjoy having sex with this gender. And if the sex before wasn't good, you just weren't having sex with the right gender. Maybe. But more specifically, you weren't having sex with the right person.
This is also where it flips for me, where it goes from Scout having a lot of judgment to Evie's judgment and naivete coming into place. Because there's a long conversation about, with their sexual play, what those acts may include. And Evie's just like, well, if I could have done something with a guy, why would I have any sexual act with a woman where she is wearing or using anything that I could have in a relationship with a guy instead? And there's some really, I don't know, naive's not the right word, but there's some dialogue about, you know, what that type of sex play looks like from biological body parts versus attachments to your body during sex play. And that blow up that eventually happens as well. And it was kind of, it was an interesting flip to see where her own bisexuality got in her way versus the times that Scout would kind of call her out for things. I'm tripping over my language horribly here, trying to be diplomatic in it. So
just say what you want to say.
I think what you're pointing to, Rebecca, is this book feels what, like, this book was written for and about the queer community. So it's taking things that I think can be undercurrents of how people view each other, queer people view other queer people, and like conversations that some people may have throughout their lives. And so like the biphobia gets flipped on its head, which is like a lot of queer people can be biphobic. Like a lot of, that just happens. There are a lot of, you know, the sentiment that like if I am a gay woman, if I'm a lesbian, why would I want to have sex with a strap on? Like, why do I want to mimic, and I'm scare quoting this whole conversation, why would I want to mimic that with a woman? And then that gets flipped on its head and explored further. All of these stereotypes and things that we think and say about each other get flipped around by these characters. So at the end of it, you're sort of faced with like, yeah, that is like a ridiculous notion. Like, that's a ridiculous thought. Why do you think that? Let's unpack that. And it's done so subtly and like masterfully that it doesn't feel like anyone's getting lectured. It feels like the characters are growing and you as a reader are growing along with them.
I think that's a great point. Yes, because in the course of like trying to keep up with the timeline, characters never just stopped doing something. They just started saying it less often or using different language and like slowly incorporating it in. And I think that evolution observation you made is really helpful for me when thinking back.
Yeah, I appreciate that you said, you know, it didn't feel like a lecture. There are, I think at this point, so many queer romance novels that have been written in the last, let's say, 5 to 10 years that take problematic aspects of our community and really try to address them in a way that is meaningful. And I appreciate that. And I totally understand the temptation and desire to take this platform, right? If you've got lots of readers who are interested in seeing themselves represented in a book, of course you're going to take that as a teaching moment where it feels appropriate. But there is a fine line between something that feels relatable and like you can reflect and grow and something that feels kind of preachy. And I did have moments in this book where I felt resistant because I would see something on the page and be like, I don't like that character said that. That is a problem. Mm-hmm. My feelings are hurt because I'm projecting a lot. And then I would read 2 chapters forward and see it get totally unpacked and flipped inside out and realize that it was just this really beautiful teaching moment that was done in a show instead of a tell way.
So speaking of the show and tell way, can I ask the two of you, this book feels so contemporary to me. Do you think that's going to age this quicker?
Yes. I don't think that's a problem, so I want to preface my answer by saying that. But yeah, of course, there are plenty of moments in this book that are going to create time points that someone reading this book 5 years from now, 10 years from now, is going to read and be like, oh, this was written by somebody prior to now. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way when I read certain books by certain references. So I'll use La Perla as an example because I know it comes up a lot in WLW.
Okay, let's be honest with anybody listening to this. I asked you one night when I was reading a WLW book what La Perla was.
Something that someone who is 10 years older than me would buy.
I'm almost 10 years older than you.
Which is why it's fine if you want to buy it.
I was just going to agree with Ruth. I do think that this is going to age. It's going to show its age. And I don't think that should be a detriment to it. Because as Ruth said, like, yeah, there are frequent moments when I'm like, no one wears that anymore. It's always clothes. It's always clothes. It's always underwear. It's always the color of the lip gloss. Like,
okay, I want to fully disclose to you guys that there's probably shit that's very, very dated that just goes way over my head. Like,
that is correct. And I love you so much, both in spite of and because of that.
Yeah.
The only thing I know is what you two have taught me. And it's a lot about sundresses, but yeah, the rest goes over my head.
Yeah. I'll say, and you two know this, but I'm saying it for the benefit of your listeners. I often don't choose to read WLW because I get kicked out by some of the references. And, you know, let's be real. I am just under 30. I am a very femme-presenting woman. I have a very specific set of life experiences that I don't often see reflected in WLW, particularly given that, you know, most authors are writing from a very different perspective than mine. And so the references are often so different than what I can project myself into. I'm not a person who reads something because I want the fantasy. I want representation. So what I'm looking for is not often what I see, right? So when I see someone talking about a very rich woman falling in love with her very rich boss, owning multiple pairs of La Perla underwear, it's hard to see myself in that. Not my experience. Mm-hmm. So, Caitlin, I'm sorry. I think I interrupted you.
No,
can you talk a little bit more about the references and what might date this or not?
No, I don't need these books to be timeless. And, like, I'm currently on a spiel reading all of these royalty romances, which, like, are a very specific time. And I don't want to hold these stories to a higher standard than, like, we would others outside of this genre. So it was nice to see it was nice to see references that I jived with a little bit more.
I would like to acknowledge that in most romance novels, we get a singular, like, penultimate grand gesture moment before the denouement into, like, okay, they live happily ever after. And one of the things that I found really interesting about this book is we get what we think is going to be a grand gesture moment that quickly turns into a very different type of conflict. And then we start to get into the happily ever after, which mm-hmm. I found really satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked, I thought that Littleton does this really well, where, like, I thought I could see where the big conflict that, like, blows up the story, I thought I could see where it was going to come from, and then it happened. And it was sort of like a little bit of rubble. And I was like, okay, that's not bad. And then the, you know, because it, like, other action happened that I didn't even see coming. So I appreciated that. I think it's playing with tropes. It's playing with our expectations for how romances and relationships work. And I agree. Like, I think having that first grand gesture moment kind of get thwarted made it, I mean, it fit. Like, it wouldn't be this story if it was wrapped up with a bow with, like, the grand gesture. Like, not with these two, not with this world that's been built. Like, there has to be some grit and, reality to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that makes it all the more satisfying and sort of compelling when we finally get to the epilogue where, you know, we typically get to an epilogue and we get to see a couple living happily ever after. We didn't get that in this book the way that I think we're accustomed to either. It's a little messier, a little spicier.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally a note from Littleton that says, y'all didn't think I was going to leave you hanging, did you? And you did not, so thank you. Thank you. I love a book with some good strap play, and this was pretty great, I have to say. I'm satisfied.
Yeah, it worked on multiple levels.
The most unique part of this book is I have never had a book that all three of us have read where we've all been able to talk into, like, pair off two and two, and then also speak, as it's proven tonight, with the three of us, where we were each able to grasp something we enjoyed and grasp a piece of, like, the world that we belong to. And I think that says a lot, because we're a very diverse group of three. We each have, like, things we share with each other, but we, as we learned when we were roommates, it is three very distinctive voices in a space, three very different aesthetics in a space, and three very different demanding voices when they want to be there in a space. So finding a unifying story was kind of cool.
That was really good, Rebecca. I like that.
So we're going to wrap up with where to find us, but I just wanted to say thanks for being brave enough to do this and tell me you wanted to. And I don't know, it's been a while since the three of us have hung out. Who knew it was going to be for this? So
I really appreciate you letting me crash your party. You know, I had a lot of fun, and I really enjoy hearing both of you speak about this genre that you love so much. And hearing you both talk about WLW books with so much passion and finesse has very much awakened a voice in the back of my brain saying, you should read more of it. You should do more of that. So that's been fun. It's a whole new world out there of queer lady representation that I'm reading and living. So I really appreciate all the recommendations, and I appreciate you including me in the conversation. Mm.
Thanks, y'all are cute. Gross and cute.
Shut up. You're cute.
We miss you like, whoa, yo. We miss you so much.
I know. What the heck?
Yeah. Caitlin, if people would like to reach out to you and talk to you more, is there a way they can do that? And if so, how?
I can be found mostly on Instagram. I'm at Same Sex in the City, or you can find me on Twitter at Same Sex the City. Where can people find you?
If people are looking for me, I am also on Instagram at Rebecca Writes a Romance, and on Twitter at Rebecca ATTT Pod. It's Rebecca A Tip the Tongue Pod, ATTT Pod. And if you're looking for the two of us, you can find us at A Tip of the Tongue on Instagram or ATTT Pod on Twitter. Caitlin, I say it every week, I appreciate you so much. Babe, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you. And yeah, in 2 weeks' time, we will have a third again. It will sadly not be you, babe, but I am excited for the person joining us in August, and we promise to have that announcement soon.
I'm pretty sure that the person joining you next time is going to be much more exciting than me. I say that with full insider knowledge that she's pretty cool.
I love y'all. I'll see you around.
Bye.